awake to be delegated. Me, I'm generous. I can delegate to you. But unfortunately, there was a car, a VW VR6, lost in the entrance of Parliament looking for directions. So it was blocking us. But my apologies with that, honorable members. Let me welcome you back from your weekend's rest. And I do hope and believe that you regained your strength to continue with the work of this august house, but most importantly, to give our beloved Mabokoboko, the Springboks, the support and oomph they require as we prepare to tackle Japan in their home ground. It gives me, therefore, a great pleasure, honorable members, to welcome you this morning to the Portfolio Committee of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and to take this opportunity to welcome the officials of the department that are here and see the DDG, and also welcome Land Bank and the officials of people accompanying it, our respected media, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. We meet this morning to consider and adopt the minutes of the last portfolio committee, which I think we will dispense of that day once we have gone with the presentation on Agri-BEE as well as that of the Land Bank. In addition, we have the presentation that I've alluded to of the Land Bank and the Agri-BEE. The Land Bank is one of the South Africa's most important developmental finance institutions, and its mandate interfaces with two of the most critical issues of our country, and discusses namely poverty and land hunger. A recent report by the McKinsey International states that, I quote, the most effective way to improve the lives of millions in poverty is to support agriculture in developing countries. Most of the world's poor are farmers, and those who are not spend much of their income on food. Transforming a country's agricultural sector can create jobs, raise incomes, reduce malnutrition, and kickstart the economy on a path to the mid-income growth. In fact, almost every industrialized nation began its economic ascent with an agricultural transformation, close quote. The report, honorable members, further states that the drivers of agricultural transformation are multidimensional, interrelated, and change over time. However, besides three common elements, the first one being there are elements of transformation readiness, which changes to a country's institutional framework, governing mechanisms, and political environment that can significantly influence the likelihood of accelerating an agricultural transformation. Secondly, the quality of the national agricultural plan or strategy is critical. Lastly, there are drivers related to the delivery of mechanisms. This category, therefore, honorable members, focuses on what is needed to translate the national agricultural plan into on-the-ground impact. In the South African context, transformation is primarily about expanding the agricultural sector so that it allows the entry of Africans, lacks of black people to participate meaningfully in the economy and the food production value chain. The agricultural sector has identified as a key platform for both transformation and growth and job creation, which could create about 1 million jobs by 2030, as alluded to by the National Development Plan. The Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development plays an important role in food security, agriculture, and building a new future for South Africa and the African continent. According to a report on Africa's agricultural potential by Farming First, it quotes, the average African farm performs at only 40% of its potential, and on present trend, the continent will only produce 13% of its food needs by 2050. Yet Africans, or Africa, as agriculture also has the greatest promise: a growing population, vibrant markets, and half the world's uncultivated arable land. The report raises the critical question which we confront as a nation and as a continent. However, we ask ourselves, how can these farms rise to their full potential to address hunger and malnutrition while boosting livelihoods and promoting inclusive growth? We must therefore, honorable members, ask all the stakeholders to work together to ensure that we expand the potential of agricultural sector from its 2.4% contribution to the GDP to a much greater level. This would allow for a quantum leap in participation that has the potential to address hunger, poverty, and food security, and the critical issue of land hunger. Around 40% of the population work in the agricultural and in rural Africa. Close to 80% of people depend on some form of agricultural activity. In deliberating on transformation in agricultural sector, we must also consider how the innovations in digital technology has facilitated transformation in this sector in many parts of the world. The task before us today is not easy, but we can win if there is collective will and commitment to change and transform. According to a recent report, a quote, small-scale farmers also benefit from new efficiencies. Over 9 out of 10 farms are family farms, and such farms between them provide over 80% of global food supply. And digital transformation is helping them enable efficient crop production at a scale while also helping smallholder feed themselves more efficiently. In order to feed over 2.5 billion people, more people, and to prevent widespread famine in the next few decades, it is estimated that food production will need to increase by 70% by 2050. Therefore, the land bank through AgriBEE has a lot to ensure that we are able to transform the sector and we are able to bring the much needed resources into the sector. Honorable members, those were just words of welcome and just getting our minds in tune to what we will be dealing on with the paper presented by the Land Bank and the AgriBEE. Is there any apologies?
Thank you. Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning, colleagues. I've got apologies from the Minister and Deputy Minister Squatcha. They are attending a World Food Summit in Eastern Cape today and tomorrow. So they apologize for both days. And I've got an apology from DM Dlamini. He's still sick. That's for sure. Or DG Mlengana also is attending the World Food Summit. And DG Mdushabane is attending a cabinet committee cluster meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Manyamza. Honorable State.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Babama has just sent me a message to say that she's feeling not well. She's going to the doctor, so she's putting in a late apology.
Wish her well from the Portfolio Committee and we wish her a speedy recovery. Any other apologies? Thank you, Honorable Members. With that said, we will now hand over to the Land Bank for the briefing on the transformation activities and the Agri-BEE Fund.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I'd like to offer our apologies from our Chairperson, Mr. Asamuloto, who was not able to join us today. He's got some board responsibilities in Johannesburg. My name is Koni Kukushe. I'm the acting CEO of the Land Bank, and with me I have Mr. Sydney Soundy, who is the Executive Manager for Strategy, Communications and Marketing. I would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the invitation to come and address yourselves, and we hope that the presentation that we have put together and we have sent to you does capture some of the responses that are required to the questions that you have. But we'd also like to invite the members as we are going through the presentation, if there's any other questions that may crop up that would not have been in the brief, feel free to address those with us so that we can be able to address them. So I'll hand over to Mr. Soundy, who will take us through the presentation, and then at the end of that we can then take questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Acting CEO, committee members, through Honourable Chair, thanks for the opportunity. May I just perhaps establish the amount of time that has been allocated to this particular presentation so I know how to pace the discussions through all of the slides that we have provided, Honourable Chair.
It seems to be a very thin document, as I didn't time. I thought you would smoothly go through it. But let us give you 30 minutes for the presentation, and then we'll set aside another 30 minutes for questions.
I appreciate that. So you will see from the table of contents that what we aim to do with this presentation is to give context, some of which you have already given in your opening remarks. We will take you through some of the key activities that are undertaken by the bank in regards to transformation and development of the sector. And then we will touch on the Agri-BEE Fund. The letter that was sent to us also required specific focus on two of the transactions and or projects that members of the Portfolio Committee had visited in 2018, June. And so they had specific questions which we covered in the presentation. And I'm hopeful that we won't have to necessarily go line by line given the 30 minutes of the presentation. So as I go through the presentation, I'll emphasize the key issues and not really delve into detail. This mandate of the bank slide is a reflection of what is contained in the Chair, you did mention the need for transformation, not only in the agricultural sector, business enterprises, but also in terms of land ownership. And indeed, this is why the bank is called Land Bank, because its mandate is supposed to facilitate the ownership of land by previously and historically disadvantaged persons. You would note that part of the responsibilities of the bank relate to the aspect you raised around food security, as well as the fact that apart from the development and transformation, the bank ought to also look at the commercial agricultural space. So to that extent, what I thought is important to just contextualize for members is that out of the mandate of the bank, there are some dual mandate responsibilities that are expected in terms of supporting transformation, the emerging and development sector, and yet at the same time to support agriculture in general. And the next slide I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, but just to indicate that in terms of the way we have unpacked our responsibility for development, we've unpacked it into five categories of development. One that relates to, in effect, the change in the structure of the agricultural sector, transforming it significantly. We also have a responsibility that in our financing is contributing towards the growth of the sector. And indeed, the issues of employment, food security, and the responsibility that we have to finance those transactions that have a positive contribution to sustainable development in the sense of sustainable agriculture, so that it's not against the environment. The next slide, Chair, is just to give you an indication so that as we go through the presentation, there's an appreciation of some of the definitions we use in our presentation. We have related to the development loan book as that which entails smallholder farmers as well as the medium-scale commercial producers, as contained in the strategic focus areas of the department. And transformation relates to those that are bigger transactions and or projects, but where there's a wholly owned structure in terms of business enterprises, but also in instances where majority ownership is 51% and more. And then we have a category that relates to transformed organizations in the sense of the Agri-BE level rating. So a level rating between 1 and 4, but which have ownership structure of 30% of black ownership and above. So even those, given the need to attend to both ownership by black entrepreneurs, but also to promote the intent of the broad-based economic empowerment program, we have included that in the space of the transformation sector. The next slide, Chair, is an indication of some of the challenges that are faced by agri-entrepreneurs in the sector, particularly those that need to enter the sector and do not have sufficient capital and experience, etc. So we list those aspects in a way to provide an indication of what the bank has to deal with in order to achieve the objectives of transformation. So we find that the new entrants generally don't have the equity contribution that is required. They are looking for affordable finance, and generally there isn't affordable finance in the industry, both from commercial banks, including ourselves, there is insufficient affordable financing unless we leverage the grant component by the state. And then indeed, most of these entrepreneurs do not have the net assets to provide for collateral purposes, they don't have property. And so as such, when you look at transactions on the basis of risk, we have challenges that pertains to the risk of the bank. So this is really just to give an indication that to support the sector requires some form of contribution and support by the state in order to ensure that this the level of affordability that is required in order for the sector to transform itself. That given, the land bank on the right hand has introduced a number of initiatives or products and services which pretty much are a subsidization methodology from our side, where we provide specialized mortgages, for example, at affordable rates, and therefore, in a way, taking a loss on those products by the bank, supported by those that we make profit on from the commercial side of our business. So this was just an indication of the nature of the challenges that are faced. The next slide, Chair, provides an indication, having given the fact that we have these challenges that needs to be addressed in order to leverage transformation. You find that a number of customers that we see, because of those, do not pass towards the financing element that contains acceptable risk in the transaction. So because, as you see, from 100 customers, when you look at the green bars, those relate to the development customers. Those bars indicate that when we see 100 customers, actually 50 of those customers have sufficient collateral, sufficient equity experience and the rest to progress to the next stage of a loan assessment. It's a big percentage which it happens on the basis because, as I indicated, most of these customers do not have those elements, the collateral, the security, etc. So ultimately, when we've gone through the credit process, out of 100 people that we engage with, or persons and enterprises that we engage with, only 15 actually get successfully funded by the bank. It's a criticism that the bank receives because you engage with 100 people and only 15 actually get to be funded, essentially because of these elements that I have been. So it's a matter that perhaps, I guess, even in the conversations later will be addressed. The next slide just gives an indication of the fact that despite these challenges, we have in recent years made a stride towards changing the dynamic of the book to the extent that in the last financial year ended March of 2019, our book for development and transformation was close to 8 billion of the total book that you see, and as such 17% of our book is what is defined in the transformation and development as indicated in the previous slide. It's not good enough, but to the extent that the structure of the agricultural sector is, I think we are beginning to make significant strides. We could do more. That might come in the conversations at a later time. We have, as a result, given those challenges that I've mentioned, tried to leverage the support of the state in the form of available grants in order to complement our loan activities with those of grant support. And as you see, we've tried to get support from the department in regards to what others would generally call the blended finance scheme, which in this slide is described as the Black Producer Commercialization Program. And as the chair has indicated, in the later part of the slide, we have the issue of the Agri-BE Fund. And then we have recently approached the Jobs Fund for various types of funds. This in an attempt, Chair, to ensure that we get the appropriate support that will give affordable financing to the sector, because if the bank doesn't do that, most of you would know that its funding is purely from the commercial markets, and as such, its cost of funding is expensive, and therefore affordable funding is close to impossible unless the bank runs at a loss and at some point perhaps at a risk of potential bailout. So this is an indication of what we've tried to leverage. This is very busy. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I think the department might also have briefed you on this with regard to the Black Producer Commercialization Program, Blended Finance, which was put on hold with a specific review to be undertaken, and is due to be reintroduced once all of the policy aspects have been appropriately agreed upon. As I indicated, the Agri-BE Fund, I will give lots of detail around that. The next slide, Chair, indicates the reference that generally gets made by the sector in relation to the support that the President announced at the State of the Nation Address. And we indicate a quote from his statement, where he indicated that over the medium-term budget, $3.9 billion has been allocated to the land bank to support black commercialization farmers. And we just needed to give this breakdown of how that $3.9 billion is made up. And as you will see, Chair, this is funding that is allocated to the department, and we have to agree specific programs with the department to leverage on this funding. It's not funds that get transferred to the bank itself, and the bank then decides what to do with it. It's actually funds that are allocated to the department, and we have to agree specific mechanisms to do that, part of which includes the blended finance facility, and so you will see that that is contained in this breakdown. The next slide, Chair, gives an indication of where we are as at the end of August this year. You would have realized that in terms of end of March, we were at 17% of the book that was described as transformation. We are now close to 20% of the book that is described as both development and transformation. And we give an indication that out of that, the development book consists of approximately 1,800 customers at an average loan balance of between 1.3 and 2 million. And then the transformation book, the one that involves those big enterprises that have a BE rating of 1 to 4 and some ownership of 30%, the sizes there are fairly big. And so there we're looking at an average of 72 million per customer. Chair, the area which we in recent times also tried to instill and solidify relates to the issue of women and youth. And if you look at the previous financial year, 64 women farmers were funded by the bank. And from the youth side, 24 youth farmers were funded by the bank, and the detail you have in front of you. In as far as the Agri-BE Fund is concerned, in essence, the way the structure works is that, as you will see, the fund aims to improve transformation and empowerment in the agri-sector, specifically in post-harvest activities, so largely focused on agro-processing. This Agri-BE Fund is the ownership thereof is that of the department. The bank is an administrator. administrator of the fund, and so the issues relating to its purpose are those that are defined and agreed upon by the department. And so you'll see that the intent of the Agri-BE fund is to be utilized for share equity acquisitions in the post-production farming operations, and this includes agro-processing. It's also for post-production related infrastructure. And so the way it works, Chair, is that the department, when you look at the bottom in terms of the business model, originates the transactions that require to be supported through the Agri-BE fund, through the provincial department. They do initial assessments at provincial department, and the national department then proceeds to provide those transactions that they feel deserve support by the Agri-BE fund. And in recent times, previously we did not do a due diligence. Due diligence was undertaken by the department itself. And all we needed to do was to, on the instruction from the department, pay those grants to the beneficiaries. Recently, we've made an agreement with the department where having shortlisted those transactions that they feel deserve contribution, they provide those to the land bank, and the land bank does a due diligence assessment to ensure that the investment, even though it's a grant, we still place a lot of interest in ensuring that it is not going to waste. So the due diligence is just to assess that the transactions in which that investment is being made is actually the appropriate investment to be undertaken with appropriate contributions to transformation. The recommendations for funding is then done by the land bank back to the department. And it is the department that then finalizes the decision to fund or not. And then we receive an instruction from the department to pay to those beneficiaries once the department is also satisfied that having gone through the due diligence, the transactions are good enough to be supported. And then from there on, in terms of the success of those transactions, the department would monitor. In terms of the timelines, we have officials from the department, so some of the detail and validations can be provided, because this is historical, and some of it happened before some of us. But it started in 2006, and members will remember that in the period of 2007-2008, there were big issues around the fund, to the extent that some of those that were involved recently, justice takes long, but recently got convicted of having fraudulently used funds from this fund. So this fund has gone through some challenges. Between 2011 to 2016, and this was once the bank was solidified, taken over by a deployment of a national treasury official, and then the oversight of national treasury was put to bear. So you will recall that Pagamani Hadebe at that period of time in 2010-2011 became the CEO of the bank. So there was comfort that some level of compliance and governance had been instituted. So there were activities during this period, but not big activities, and you will see in the next slide the amount of monies that flew out of this fund. And then in 2016 to 2019, there was a period of time when a suspension letter was sent to Land Bank to say stop every activity that relates to Agri-BE funds. And then in November of 27, there was an upliftment of that suspension as we began to renegotiate this current agreements that I have alluded to, where there is now even the issue of due diligence by the bank. So, as we stand today, 43.8 was paid into the fund as part of the annual deposit by the DAF, or now DARAT. The current balance in this fund, Chair, is 251 million. These are the payments that were made during the period 2014 and 16. And you'll see that it's not a lot of transactions. So we're talking about five transactions during that period to the amounts as indicated. And this was during the time that I said there was a bit of comfort that activities could happen. And then in recent times, we have just completed due diligence on the transactions that were provided to the bank through the department. These are the transactions that we've undertaken a due diligence on. They amount to 46 million. The due diligence has been completed and submitted to the department for the final grant approval decision to be made. So that relates to the AgriBE fund. I'll quickly run through, and you have the detail in front of you. These two companies and or entities are the ones that were visited by the portfolio committee in June of last year. And the letter that we received from this committee was to unpack these transactions a little bit. Having said what I said in the beginning around the issues of development and transformation, these transactions fit largely in the transformation space. As I indicated, the transformation space have bigger sizes of transactions, whereas on the development side, the average transaction, as I indicated, is much smaller. So this is the Cavalier Meat Group. The intent here, because this was a white-owned enterprise, the intent from the bank, as it introduced its new strategy to test the idea of transforming existing businesses so that they can have black ownership. So these are existing established businesses. And the idea there is for the bank to take an equity stake with the idea of warehousing it for the purposes of an employee trust. So as it is now, it is the main bank that actually has a stake in the business with the intent to transfer that to an employee trust. So that's the nature of the transaction. And you will see that having given you a sense of some of the elements we test when we look at the impact of development, the five areas that I spoke about when I began the presentation, we generally do that even with our assessment of transactions where we think we need some change or some transformation in the entities. So the black ownership part is for us to, as I indicated, to transfer that ownership of those shares to an employee trust. And the employee trust is one that will be made up of the black employees, who are 90% of employees in this group. And so we have progressed a bit in the sense that we are expecting that by the end of 2019 the trust will be in place. But what would happen is that we would then convert that ownership of the bank into a loan to the trust, because as you would appreciate, the bank doesn't just give money. So we would convert it into a loan with the idea that this business, as successful as it is at this point, has the capability to
to repay also on behalf of the employee tribe. So that's the essence of this transaction, Chair. And the rest of the other aspects you have seen, but perhaps just to indicate that since the investment, because as I indicated with economic growth, we always look at where we invest, there must be something different in the operation. And the idea is to expand the operation when you invest in the operation. So to that extent, the support that came from the Land Bank, ITC, and the partnership with Woolworths has managed to increase the staff complement of this operation from 700 to just over 1,400 employees. It's a significant growth. It's pretty much close to double the employees. These may not yet be owners, but the extent to which jobs have been created is something to take note of. And then, as you have seen, this company, because of some of the requirements that are made by funders like ourselves and ITC, has stopped the usage of labor brokers and permanently employed some of these employees. So I think some of this you have read yourselves. Majestic Oils, this is a totally black-owned entity. In the sense of Mr. Dalla Villay. And you will see that this group is growing. It commenced January of 2007 in terms of construction and commissioning of the plant, which we helped Prospecto finance. And the reason why I talk about Prospecto Finance is that this business did its own investment into growing the business. And as a result, put pressure on the ability to have capital to expand further. And so to the extent that it did that, it required the assistance of the bank to lend its money. This is how the structure was approved. 210 million, 110 million has since been disbursed recently in September, and the remaining 100 will be disbursed within the next 6 months. And as I said, to finance expansion, and we're talking about the transformation piece here, because we're talking about a business that is 100% owned by a black person. You will see we've covered some of the elements of support that this entity provides in the community in which it operates. I need not, in the interest of time, go through each of the elements that have been highlighted there. Suffice to say that the community of Krugersdorp relies for employment significantly, not only to this entity, but the entity that does indeed provide sufficient employment for the people of Krugersdorp. And we've spoken about issues of economic growth, the employment aspect I've just touched now. And the business is also supporting emerging farmers in the sense of its procurement of produce from farmers around and closer to Krugersdorp, so the northwest province. Indeed, I mean, if you look at the nature of the operation in terms of the fact that the demand for sunflower and soya cake has increased, the contribution that this business makes to the production of animal feed, there are multiplier benefits that are provided by this type of business. So, Chair, I have whisked through this presentation. I hope it was useful to provide context, because I think in terms of the detail is in front of you. You rightly indicated that it's not a long presentation, but I think it contains quite a lot of detail. So, Chair, I will pause here and give back to yourself or to direct how we handle the engagement. presentation made. Honourable members, there's a presentation. Any questions of clarity? Honourable Steyn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I won't be asking you questions at this stage about the two, but the areas that we visited in the last, I'm sure, unfortunately on that day I could not be part, but I am going to link it to some of my questions, Chairperson, and let me start with the first one. Looking at the presentation about the two companies or places that we visited at the portfolio committee, it looks to me like the criteria that is used for the land bank, let me start first with what criteria is used. Was the criteria drawn up by the land bank itself, or was it done in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development for funding for the, let's call it blended finances, it's easier, or the Black Producers Commercialization Program. So the criteria itself, who decided on that and how does it work? And would the land bank think that smaller scale farmers, which I think was the target of this program, would be able to get financing under that criteria? And the reason why I'm mentioning that, Chair, is looking at the two programs that we have visited, and it looks to me like already companies that were well established and easier to then fall within the criteria. Linked to that, I want to understand the 3.9 billion rand allocation by the Deputy President or the announcement over the MTF. Would that in its own the whole amount fall in this blended finance program, or is it separate? I want to see the link towards that, and then maybe the Department of Rural Development or Agriculture can also tell me that would CAF funding then be a separate amount, or is that already included in that 3.9 billion rand? So the 3.9 billion rand at the end of the day could become a bigger amount or not. On that, from what would be the ratio between the grant and the loan under this program, and would that, you know, as I say, be part of cost then, or is it already in that 3.9? Then I would like to find out from the land bank, I'm aware that you have closed some offices in the last few months, in the past year. Would you be having the capacity to assist with all these farmers when you have to look at these programs? Then I have a concern about the due diligence. If you can just explain to me again, how is it done at the moment? Let me not say at the moment, let me first ask, when would the program then start again? There was a concern you were stopped by that, because of, I assume, some due diligence challenges that came up. When do you see that the program is actually going to start again, going forward? And then, would you not think that it would be advisable for the private sector to have some people sitting in on the approvals of the screening committee, just to make sure to stop exactly what I think happened and why it was stopped in the first place? And then my last question would be regarding the people that where approvals were already or approvals made but put on hold. What is currently happening with those people? Is there another way for the land bank to assist them, or through other financing? And then, Chairperson, not related to this, the drought. There was a program that farmers could contact the land bank. My concern, Chair, is, and I think maybe it's something that we can also discuss, as far as I know, Lions Bank would not assist them if a drought was not gazetted in their areas. And I think, Chairperson, at this committee, it's something that we need to take on, because I even heard the Deputy President in the Northern Cape last week saying that, you know, the Land Bank has got a program to assist. The Land Bank program only assists when a drought has actually been gazetted for that area. So I think we need to get involved in that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Masupa.
Thanks, Chair. I think a lot of questions were addressed by Honourable State. But I think the question that I have, Chair, with regards to the land bank is that would it be advisable that maybe, you know, in terms of expanding their mandate and obviously leaving their mandate, that they might need our assistance to relook at the National Credit Act? Because primarily, you know, the National Credit Act give you your activities that you can do and what you cannot do. And at the moment, it seems as if from Land Bank's point of view, you know, they just live within that NCA parameters and they don't go beyond that. I think maybe, you know, Land Bank can really assist us in terms of engaging us around, you know, looking at the National Credit Act review and in ensuring that we support their program. The second question, Chair, is around the issue of the due diligence and the turnaround time. Chair, the farmers are worried about the time it takes for Land Bank to really approve the application. It is my view that, you know, the Land Bank seriously consider localizing the credit, call it the credit underwriting, you know, in the province in order for them really to make a quick decision and ensure that, you know, farmers are supported. You know, farmers are complaining that they take a year or 2 years, you know, before, you know, they get the final answer, and by that time, you know, they have already, you know, made losses and their time of planting, you know, they couldn't really even do that. The last one, which is relating to another blended finance program that is running within Land Bank, is the hot fee. I just want to know, Chair, from the Land Bank colleagues as to how is the progress, what are the lessons learned from there, and what are some of the things that they are taking out of that in order to really ensure that, you know, the programs like the hot fin is accommodated within the Land Bank broadly. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just one question to add to that, specifically also speaking to conversion rates and people applying for loans with the Land Bank, and specifically our developmental farmers. My fear is that a lot of our developmental farmers, and we've been on oversight and we've had our different presentations during this past term, my fear is that our developmental farmers, if I can call it that, are not assisted in actually in the know-how of how to apply for loans with the Land Bank. And I would like to know whether the Land Bank is actually assisting them to actually show them how to get their affairs in order, because I think that's one of the greatest fears that or problems that we've seen. And would that be something that we should rather focus to the department? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chair. Thank you, Chair. Two fairly simple questions. What is the support that Land Bank gives to the very small sector in the agricultural business of organic farming, if any? And secondly, having noted the severe drought in Eastern Cape, particularly around the Graaffreinet area, is there any support from Land Bank going to those farmers? Thank you.
Honourable Papa.
Thank you, Chair. First, I would like to try to ask Land Bank a few questions or some clarities and requests. One first request is that I would request Land Bank to understand two different situations. One, that this committee is the committee of the 6th Parliament, not that of the 5th Parliament. And therefore, important to give information to this committee. But secondly, as if in contrast, the same understanding should be that this committee is informed by the information from the previous committee, which also puts you in a situation that you should be able to assess in both directions. And therefore it tells you that there is no way you can tell not true information to this committee. And at the same time, there is a need for you to inform this committee in a way that you understand that it's of the Sixth Parliament. Now, secondly, I would like to understand whether in this presentation, or this presentation would have been the same if there was no visit by that Fifth Parliament Portfolio Committee, which came up as we are informed with findings and concerns and recommendations. Because it seems to me what is not what doesn't become clear here is that there is a specific reference to the concerns, so that it does not become like a routine briefing to a committee as if there were no concerns raised before which had to be addressed. If you come to that, for instance, I would say if there's a concern, or there's concern that on your mandate, double mandate or dual mandate, there's a possibility that the mandate of supporting the established commercial farmers is likely or apparently dominating the mandate to support the emerging farmers, and therefore what has been done or is being done to address that. That is, addressing the concerns that have been raised specifically, not just giving a routine or a report that normally you feel that this is a presentation that is fit for a portfolio committee. And my last one would be, when you talk of transformation, I do sense that you are talking about implementing transformation. You are not talking about undergoing transformation. It doesn't sound as if the land bank itself is feeling the pain, because I know transformation is painful. You will never enjoy transformation. You will always feel that there's something wrong when there is transformation in you. So I'm interested in that process, that do you feel that you are undergoing transformation as a land bank,
as in order to be able to be part of
implementing that transformation. In that case, it means I'm trying to find out exactly what is your feeling about it. Is it as normal? Does it need to be changed? Or it has to remain like it was before? Because this is what we are supposed to find out from you in order to assist in our oversight process, that this is what you are going to do, this is what you are experiencing. And there's also this feeling that the bank is not actually implementing what is felt that is supposed to be assisting predominantly the essence of it to us. The essence is supporting the growing farmers. We are also likely to be concerned that you might behave like an ordinary bank, which is not be the case. The federal government that banks behave like another bank, but to us, this is a land bank, which is not supposed to be like another bank, because it got a specific mission and mandate to us. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Muntwedi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Morning, everybody. Chair, from the presentations that I think were sent to us, I think there's another presentation. I'm not sure if it's still going to be presented by the Lead Bank.
It will be presented.
Okay. Yeah, so it's fine. I'll deal with it later. Now, what I wanted to raise, Chair, is that I think Honorable Kapa covered some of the issues that I wanted to raise. From the legacy report, there were issues that were in that legacy report. And I'm a bit worried that the board, nobody is representing the board of the Land Bank. Because some of these issues, Chair, is that the committee experienced a lot of challenges before in the fifth parliament in getting the Land Bank to fully account to the committee on its mandate. I just wanted to check if in this new parliament, would that still be the attitude of Land Bank towards the committee, where it would not fully want to be accountable to the committee, because that is what was raised as part of the legacy report in the fifth parliament, Chair. Now, another issue that I just want also on that legacy report, Chair, is with regard to follow-up issues in this new parliament that I would also want to take up with Land Bank. It's around the commercialization that the DAF and rural development apparently raised serious issues of concern with regard to that program on commercialization, relating to issues of criteria for farmer or producer support. I just want to check with the Land Bank when those issues are resolved that were raised as issues of concern in the previous parliament, were they resolved? And was that document finally submitted to parliament? If not, can we have a copy of that program on commercialization, Chair? And another thing also, just to quickly pick up there, is on the development of the monitoring and reporting framework for all funds transferred to the Land Bank. Was that framework developed? Is it still there? Can we get a report of, say, development of a monitoring and reporting framework for all the funds transferred to Land Bank? Yeah, can also get that report if there's actually that. And lastly, Chair, is on the issue of the guidelines for the utilization of the Agri-BEE fund in advancing sectoral transformation. Do we have them? Can we get them so that we also get to then look on those? Lastly, again, sorry, Chair, on the previous legacy report, is on the issue of the copy of the signed MOU between Land Bank and the DRL on the blended finance model. Those are the issues that I would like to pick up from the previous fifth parliament, Chair. Now, coming to the presentations, Chair, I want to speak on the issue of, I think Honorable Masipa also covered that one, on the turnaround time for the approval of the grant, which is very problematic because in most instances, farmers have to stay to wait for a very long period without actually knowing what is it that has happened with regards to what they had actually applied for. Now, another thing, Chair, that I want to take with the committee is on the developmental loan book that I had the colleague talking about there. My worry is that it does not cover emerging farmers. I believe that emerging would be an entrance in farming, but I'm worried that Land Bank does not cover your definition of the development loan book does not cover emerging farmers. It only speaks on it does not speak on emerging farmers, which is a bit problematic for me to say. Are you as Land Bank not actually focusing on supporting emerging farmers? Because those are the farmers at grassroots level that must be nurtured so that they grow and become part of your other programs on commercialization. That is my worry, Chair. Now, another thing, Chair, that I just wanted to check with the land bank is on the issue of the process, especially when applying for this Agri-BEE. I can tell you that that land bank said that they are the administrators of the Agri-BEE fund. But my challenge, Chair, is that when farmers go to land bank offices, there's not even a single official who's designated to deal with any BEE, Agri-BEE programs. And I think I had you presenting that the Agri-BEE is actually starts with provincial departments, but then it goes to as far as national. But at district level, when farmers go there, even at the level of provincial department, at the level of department, or even at the level of land bank, there's nobody who is able to give them information. Why can't you, land bank, as the administrators of the program, have officials designated in your offices that are able to take farmers through that program? Because farmers would want to benefit through that program, and they are just not benefiting on that program, Chair. Now, another thing on that is that the process starts with the department. Land bank comes at the level of the due diligence and also the recommendation, and the project is still subjected to DAF or DRL to either approve or reject. How is that impacting on the turnaround time for you to finally have that thing approved? Is it not a long process that actually delays and leaves you as land bank, actually farmers are looking at you and saying you are failing, only to find out that the process is actually delayed at the departmental level? Why can't you have, why can't the process be concluded by you? Because the fund is even with you. Why should you do recommendation? Why should you do due diligence and give it to DAF? What is DAF going to do with that? Why can't you finalize it so that we see movement with regards to transformation? Because I can tell you, from where I'm sitting, you are not doing anything to as far as transforming the agricultural sector. And maybe those may be some of the challenges that are impacting on you, not to actually doing that change. Now, lastly, Chair, I just want to pose two questions on programs that I got contacted by some farmers. There's a young farmer by the name of Bongani Masibuko. There's a program that they have applied to with the land bank. Now, the initiation fee, he paid the initiation fee. Now, land bank cannot disburse the funds to the farmer because they're saying they must first wait for rain to come. I am not sure if land bank knows how are farmers in dry lands, how are they working. They don't wait for the rain to come for them to prepare the soil. They prepare the soil before the rain comes. And only when the rain comes is when they start to put seed underground. And you as land bank not assisting that farmer, you are actually failing the young person. Because he has got his tractor, he has got his rain, and you are waiting for the rain to come. When the rain comes, he does not have to start preparing the soil. He must put the seed on the ground. Now, what is the problem? Why are you not assisting that person? Because he has complied with everything that you wanted from him. And the last question, Chair, is that on your program of assisting commercial farmers, there are farmers that you assisted through your program, and some of these farmers, you as land bank bought seeds from a well-known company, a recognized company, and you distributed them to farmers. And farmers planted those seeds, and none of them germinated. And you have done nothing as land bank to go and check with the company where you procured seeds, and you want farmers to pay you for the loans. Why should they pay you for the loans? Because you provided them with seeds, the seeds that never germinated. And you are not going to check the supplier who supplied you with seeds. You are saying poor farmers must pay for those loans. They've not harvested a thing. And yet you still want them to service a loan that you that
that they cannot actually say this, Chair. But I think those are the issues, Chair. I have actually prepared on this other presentation before, but I'll wait so that I wait for the presentation to be disposed of and then I then cover those questions. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Clapper.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, some of the issues have been asked by my colleagues here, but without duplicating the questions, I want to know from the Lady Bank Chair, from this page 6 on the presentation. Supporting development and transformation, addressing the challenges of new entrants. They are listed in those two blocks and whatever assistance. There's a take note at the bottom. To address all the challenges faced by new entrants is costly and requires funding support for the bank to provide affordable financing to absorb the credit risk associated with new entrants and provide pre- and post-finance support services. My question is that, Chair, where are we as Land Bank and the emerging farmers? Because I read from your page somewhere here, Google page 12, that you're dealing with emerging farmers, and these are the people that doesn't have collateral, that doesn't have equity. In about 3 years ago, there was the deputy minister in Northwest, there was a summit for farmers about the drought summit. And we were hard on the insurance companies, but they don't want to insure the farmers, especially around Northwest, because it is so dry and there's no hope that it will rain. And one of the key issues that came out of that was that government has, in a way, withdrew from supporting Land Bank, and Land Bank could be the only bank that can assist our farmers and everything. Hence, for sure, this resuscitation after a lapse, working together with Land Bank. Now, if you need funding, and we are here, and there are hope of the people, where are you? Does this mean without collateral, without equity, you are unable to assist our people? What happens if a person doesn't have this? That takes me to the question that Honorable Montwedi asked her. What is it that you do for emerging farmers? On page 12, that is table that talks to the breakdown. Yeah, National Treasury, the 3.9 billion. There's also a take note. Agreement between Land Bank and Department is to be concluded on application of the allocated funds to specific programs. Where we are sitting, we are on the neck of the Department on commercialization that has been pronounced. Agreement is yet to be concluded. What is the turnaround here? When can we expect that? Because it is out there. Those that want to be categorized or be assisted to become commercial, they are waiting. How long will it take you from June pronouncement up to now? When do we see this happening? This is the question that we ask the department. We want to hear from the Land Bank. When are you envisaging to complete this process? The next table, transformation program, that's what it talks also about, what you received from DAF and DLR then, which seeks to address the issue of blended finance. Now, the question also, when somebody has applied for the grant, how long does it take? I'm asking this because on the slide of those big commercial farmers that you said everything due diligence has been done, you are just waiting for a department. I'm asking myself, or if you have applied for two trucks, does it take you a year? Does it take you 2 years for you to get something from Land Bank? What is your turnaround on applications of grants? Are you also subjected to the yearly expenditure like the department, that if they don't spend the grants, it goes back and it's a rollover, you must apply for a rollover? Or with you, it's just okay because the money is in the bank? That's what I'm trying to understand. So that we're able, Chair, to exclude the issue of taking the grant, depositing it to go to the bank so that it becomes like they have spent and money is not spent there. People apply and they wait forever for applications. My last take would be on the Cavalier. I just want to understand, because I saw that IDC, there's money stated over 200 million that was given to, that was used there. But what is 19.9% in monetary terms, the stake that you bought Go Cavalier? How much equates to 19.9? I'm asking this because you're intending it to give it over that stake as a loan to the employees, the Cavalier, or how much would they have to pay a loan to Land Bank that equates 19.9%. There's also indication that the Cavalier Group would give them 10.1%, rounding off their shareholding to 30%. And Land Bank will provide funding for that transaction. Is this transaction the 10.1%? Does it mean you still have to give Land Bank some money for the 10.1%, which will also equate a loan again to the CET, the Company Employees Trust? What is the progress ailing at advanced stage? Because my interest out of the legacy report was, now that you're saying there are over 50% increase on the employees, from 700 to over 1.4. Is there a criteria for shareholding? Do you say those who came first or those that were hired last month should become shareholders at any part? Is there a criteria that you looked at for these employees, or as long as you are an employee, even if you get fired next month and you still become a shareholding and whatever? I'm asking because the progress is at advanced stage. Or what is it that you are about to conclude with Cavalier? How far are we on this one? If it's in advanced stage, does it mean by December this year we'd see the fruits? And this is based out of what honorable members has asked emanating from the legacy report for the state, the employees. What is it? And is Cavalier now on board with the 10.1? Have the criteria been set out? Are people trained, and or are you playing any oversight on this transaction? Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me also sponsor a couple of questions to the presentation made by the Land Bank. On the graph presented on page 8 of your presentation, it illustrates the Land Bank's contribution to development and transformation. Given the bank's developmental mandate as a development finance institution, a DFI, how do you explain that since 2008, funding to the commercial farmers has grown from 15.9% to 37.3% in 2019? Yet in the same period, of the development and transformation grew from 0% in 2008 to 7.9%. Can you please explain that? I find it quite challenging on my part. Question number two, we often speak loosely about corruption. to the extent that it is taken that the government is not serious about addressing the scale of corruption in our country. And you say in your presentation that during the period of 2007 to 2008, there were a number of fraud cases which led to convictions. Can we get the details of who were the culprits and when were they convicted and how long is their sentences? So if you can be able to provide details in that regard, we'll appreciate it as a committee. You have also closed some of your offices as alluded to by the Honourable Stain. Can you tell the committee as to which offices have been claimed or have been closed and which offices are you retaining? And in the areas that you are not having any offices, how are you able to render your services to farmers, particularly in regions that are located within rural areas? Question four, how has the land bank over the constraints of funding development how have you dealt with the constraints of funding development and transformation? Can you also explain, as question five, the nature of these constraints in view of your role as a DFI and what measures and strategies are in place to address this? You spoke of the development loan book in which you stipulate is between 8% and 12%. Therefore, how does this impact on the land bank's mandate as a DFI? Also like to understand the relationship of the land, or the relationship between the land bank with other developmental finance institutions such as the BRICS Bank and the China Africa Agricultural Fund, which has allocated $50 billion to the agricultural fund. And how does the land bank assist farmers to access such institutions? And there may be other institutions that you are linked with or you have knowledge on that you are probably able to channel farmers to be able to gain access to funding, whether it be in the SADC region and the African continent through the AU or through other entities globally. Thank you. So, thank you, Chair, and together with the acting CEO, we'll share some of the questions. It's a book, but they are very useful. I think in some instances we'll give detail that we currently have, and in some instances we might not have the detail. We'll need to provide the detail post this particular session, particularly where it relates to specifics of names of transactions that are undertaken. For example, Member Mondredi raised a particular individual, so there, I mean, we have to go and look at what those details are. So I thought perhaps what we should do is to give context to this fund, because I think there's a mismatch of understanding, I think, around how these funds are structured and how the bank are utilizing them.
So the transactions that you visited, or the Fifth Parliament's committee visited, have not been financed through the Agri-BEE Fund or the Blended Finance or any grant. Those facilities have been financed by the bank's normal operations. They were raised here as a question, and that's why we answered the, to the extent that they were. What I recall as the purpose of that visit was the committee wishing to get a view and experience and visit some of the some of the operations that have been funded by the bank, but not necessarily from the Agri-BEE Fund. It was just across what is the bank doing around transformation. So, just to correct that those transactions, Cavalier and Majesty, are not from the Blended Finance nor from the Agri-BEE Fund. The other context that I think is important is that we have these different funds, and then we have, I think in some instances we refer to the Blended Finance program or the Black Producer Support Program as if it's the same with the Agri-BEE Fund. They are not the same. They are different, and they have different requirements. And I think this talks to the slide where Member Steyn raised the issue of the allocation of that 3.9 billion to the bank. So maybe if we can go through that again, which is slide number 12. So you will see that this is provided, as we indicated, over a 3-year medium term. The first component of that allocation deals with restitution grants. It deals with land reform grants. The land bank does not manage those. Those are managed by the department. And that totals to a figure of 2.8 billion of this 3.9 billion, if you look at that total. So where the land bank is involved with the department is in relation to where you see the DAF component. And this is why we separated them as we have done now. And as provided from our colleagues at National Treasury, even though they are now in the same department. But as you know, the focuses are different on the land and rural development as well as on the agriculture side. So the DAF portion is where the land bank's involvement truly is. This is where the agreement around providing a specific support mechanism for the Black Producer Support Program takes course. And this one is exclusive, as you will see, from the Agri-BEE Fund. This allocation, the 3.9 billion, does not include the Agri-BEE Fund. That's something that the department has. I don't have sight of the rest of what the department has. But as I indicated to you in terms of the quantum of that Agri-BEE Fund, we currently have 251 million in the bank, which is another aspect that I think is important for us to clarify, that a transfer, and member raised the issue around the fact that, yeah, perhaps we just want to see expenditure having been undertaken. And so what happens is the department, as an administrator, land bank, the department allocates the funds to us. And in many of these instances, we can't utilize those funds ourselves unless there's an approval from the department, because we're acting on behalf of the department. It's not where we get money and then they say, okay, given the terms of reference and focus, please go and utilize it. It doesn't work like that. And as you see, this is why in terms of the approvals, we
simply have to get the approval of the department from a grant perspective. So here's another perhaps clarity before I go through the specific details. The issue of loans and grants also needs to be understood. We, as a bank, raise funding from the commercial markets. In fact, in some instances, more expensively than the established commercial banks to get money that we can lend out. And so pretty much close to 100% of the bank's balance sheet is from a liabilities point of view, from the loans that we must go and borrow money in the market in order to lend it out as loans, has to be repaid by the bank to those investors at specific rates. And so the component that we deal with is loans. And as you've seen in one of the transactions, it's also where we've taken stake, an investment stake. So we deal with loans and very small investment portfolio. The grant portion is utilized where we look at the transaction and we say, oh, you know, this transaction can work only if this emerging firm would have had equity to contribute for it to be viable, because you want the business in itself to be able to generate sufficient revenues to repay the loan. So where the loan cannot be repaid, we will also not recommend, if you include the loan and the grant as a so-called blended finance, we will only recommend the level of loan that we know that the commercial operation will be able to service. And there, even with support from the equity of the grant. The land bank does not have a business where it gives pure grant allocation to a transaction. Because as others have indicated, we are a bank. And indeed, I mean, there's a relative argument that can be placed on the land bank to say you operate pretty much like a commercial bank. And the reason for it is because its balance sheet structure is commercial in nature. We receive funding from commercial investors who want us to repay them. And so the amount of money we generate from loans must be sufficient enough to repay those investors. So to the extent that there are particular strategic concerns around the bank, and perhaps the acting CEO will add more to it, it relates to the way in which the bank is structured. And strategically, the board has taken a view which is currently under investigation to relook the purpose of the bank. We understand what is required from the Act and what these members are actually requiring of the bank to do. But the way it is, it has got its own constraints. So the investigation that is being undertaken is to say, does it make sense? Does it make sense? We haven't concluded, but does it make sense that you actually separate specific business units in the bank so that you have a business unit that is totally focused on development? And we can say, what is it that is required from investors and the state to make the development operation work as it is alone? So that the other business, which is commercial, is the one that raises commercial funding and repays it, and therefore operates pretty much like a commercial bank, but within the same group. But what members should appreciate is that if you did that, then it requires a level of support for the development unit. Because otherwise, on its own, it's not going to be sustainable, because the level of commercial funding that we have to raise, if we have to go and fund those operations at affordable financing, at levels where the debt is too high, we don't require equity, the ability to repay at those rates that these investors are requiring is going to be challenged.
the criteria for AgriDE and blended finance. So again, I think I made that point that the AgriDE fund has its specific criteria, and there's a slide there that indicates the nature of the funding, which is likely on the agro-processing space and so on. And so those criteria are set by the department, obviously in consultation with partners, including ourselves, to say this is going to be doable, is it not doable? And that is on slide 16, if you go and look at the detail. That relates only to AgriBE fund. So criteria for the AgriBE fund, different from those that relate to what is called the Black Producer Support Program, or what has now been retitled Blended Finance Scheme. So those are two different programs, and they have different levels, or rather different requirements or criteria. So I hope that addresses the question, Member Spain. The 3.9 billion I've dealt with that. You've seen the breakdown, and as I indicated, the equity fund is not there.
Just a point on the question of whether on the blended finance program would smallholder farmers benefit. So the criteria for the blended finance program, and part of the reason why it was put on hold towards the end of last year, was to relook at the criteria to ensure that emerging farmers actually are the ones that will benefit largely within that, to look at capping some of the grant amounts that are required, capping the loan amounts in the ratio that is that this can be given to. So the aim of really reviewing the criteria of the blended finance program was to make sure that it actually does address and capture the smallholder farmers.
And then in relation to the screening committee, that again has to be read in the context of the different funds. We at this stage have, or rather let's put it this way, the AgriBE fund has its own committee within DAF, not at Land Bank. Land Bank just does the due diligence as we indicated, and then takes the due diligence back to the department, and the department makes a call, they instruct us, we go to the bank account, transfer the money to the beneficiary that is involved. And in those transactions, the AgriBE fund, we don't have a loan there. That's why we said we are purely an administrator. That's the reason why we call it that, Member Madrid, because there we don't even do loans. We just do the due diligence from an assessment done by the department at provincial level, and then after that tested by the national department, and then after we have done a due diligence to satisfy that it's something worthy to invest in, the department then gives an instruction. So, and then on the blended finance, the one that has now been put on hold, the AgriBE fund has not been put on hold. As you saw, there are six transactions that are now with the Department for Finality. The one that has been put on hold is the blended finance, the response that the acting CEO has given now in terms of reviewing those criteria such that we can limit it to supporting more smaller transactions than the bigger transactions. And then as to whether private sector can be brought to bear, from the land bank side in terms of due diligence, we don't require that. We think we have the capability and the skills to do that. And so maybe the department might want to respond in terms of its own committees, but I'm not going to respond on behalf of the department. of drought support. Again, this is another aspect that needs to be appropriately understood. Land Bank raised some funding, with our colleagues. A question was raised around the relationship that we have with sister DFIs and in some instances even foreign development institutions. This particular fund was worked with the IDC, so they afforded us reasonable sort of terms to create this fund in the bank to support, as you rightfully indicated, those areas that have been gathered as areas impacted by drought. And those funds are not grants, and that's why it's a softer loan, perhaps is a term that one should use, because we're providing it at affordable levels to those that have been impacted by drought. So when the president and the deputy president raises that there will be available funds for drought, I guess that will go through the appropriate sector department, as is the process. But for now, what we have is something that we created by raising funds to support drought.
And maybe to add to that, just the importance of making sure that the areas that are supported through this program are areas where drought has been conditioned. This is a measure for us to be able to control who actually claims that they have suffered as a result of drought or as a result of other things. And in fact, even when a farmer comes to us and is wanting to apply for the drought relief, we do assess whether the distress that they find themselves under is as a result of drought or as a result of other financial mismanagement. So it's very important that we control the access to the funds that we have to ensure that they actually are used for the purpose that they are. So in so far as the portfolio committee's assistance in making sure that areas that are experiencing drought are gazetted appropriately as quickly as possible, that facilitates the process there.
So, Member Stein also raised the issue of the closure of offices and the capacity and so on. I think perhaps, and that issue also came in other following questions, we probably need to give the committee an indication of where our representation is. So we will provide the committee with a list of where our offices are. And those of our partners. So, and let's perhaps speak to that, because the nature of the operation of the bank is such that the more you create offices, the more expensive it is, and if the book is at the size that it is, the affordability to manage those offices and the staff and so on, it becomes a problem. Because we just can't afford it. So generally what institutions that faces this kind of challenge do is to partner with other stakeholders who hopefully can provide the service on behalf of the bank. And so we do that through partners, and we have what is called the wholesale funding facility, as well as something else called the service level agreement. Partners, so those partners are the ones we utilize to reach broadly than perhaps we can do on our own, and they operate on the basis of the credit criteria and focus of the bank on our behalf to do that. Whilst I'm still on that, and you know, in relation to the partnerships that we have, the chair raised the issue around the graph to say that
not palatable that you have growth of the commercial sector in exponential terms, more so than that of development, and that is slide number 8. So when you look at that slide, it's at the time when the bank needed to address the issues of financial sustainability, and as I indicated, when the department, the National Treasury, had deployed a CEO from that side, Pagamani Hadebe, and a strategy to ensure that the bank has sufficient scale in terms of its book was adopted, where the bank partnered with previous cooperatives in the agricultural sector who had now turned themselves into corporates, into PTY LTDs, but pretty much on the back of a cooperative model where those entities represented farmers for the purpose of supporting those farmers with inputs, fertilizer, seeds, and so on, and with storage where those farmers do not have storage. So when you travel and you see these big silos of grain, those are owned by these cooperatives, not by individual farmers. And so when farmers have produced, they send their produce to the cooperative, it gets stored into those silos. They also negotiate market access and selling of that maize on behalf of the farmer. So the reason why these were created was to manage that food value chain. So to the extent that the bank needed to grow its book in order to cover the expenses, the strategy at that point was to go and negotiate the purchase of those financial services loans from those companies, these SLA partners, to the bank, and therefore the bank's balance sheet grew. But you would know that those cooperatives were white cooperatives in essence. And so that's why the growth of this book on the back of that strategy to solidify the balance sheet of the book could only have come to fruition through a acquisition of those loans, and those loans happened to be largely white. So that's giving context to the partners.
And I think just to add to that, if you look at the graph, members will also note that between 2012 and 2015, the rate of growth for the development and transformation book was also fairly muted. So where we start in 2012, which is when we really could be able to measure the numbers, with the development and transformation book at 8 billion rand, which represented 4% of the loan book, to 2015, that book doubling, or more than doubling, to 2.3 billion, but still fairly small in proportion to the overall book at 6%. And I think the bank then took a strategy to really emphasize and focus on trying to accelerate the growth of the development book, and hence you see from 2016 to 2019, that book has grown from the 2.3 billion of 2016 to 7.9 billion, which is 17%, and as Sydney indicated earlier, that has in this current financial year also grown to about 20%. So the progress that we are making in trying to tilt the mix of the book between commercial and transformation, I think we are really starting to see the fruits. We are trying to push as much as we can the number of loans that we are giving to transformation and development farmers, and that has also been indicated in terms of the number of individuals that have been affected by this.
Member Masipa, the expansion of the mandate as far as it relates to the National Credit Act and whether we need to review that. I mean,
far as the due diligence is concerned, again, I mean, we have indicated the due diligence that we undertake ourselves for our own loans, where we are not using any of the grant funding, and where we are not doing a due diligence purely for the grant program, which is the Agri-BEE fund. So we consistently do that, and the extent to which turnarounds are improved relates to the availability of information from the counterparty or the customer. The more it takes to get information, the more the due diligence is going to elongate. And this brings us to some of the questions that were raised around the issues of support to prepare presentations for emerging farmers and or small farmers. Part of what we are suggesting in terms of the relook at the nature of the structure of the organization is in order that the development business can also be assigned the responsibilities to do what we have termed pre- and post-finance support. Because we do appreciate that funding all on its own is not the only success factor. That proper preparation is important. And in many instances, as someone alluded, I think it was Member Beard, the nature of the business plan determines the prospect of success in terms of providing that funding. And so what we are suggesting is that if the bank is enabled, and given the challenges I mentioned around our funding structure, these things come at a cost. So if we're able to raise funding to really just provide support for pre-financing activities, which are not lending activities, but are necessary for the lending activities, that would be helpful. So the idea is that we approve, or rather we strengthen that, so that good ideas and entrepreneurs that have the what it takes to get funding work are not curtailed by the fact that the business plan does not appropriately support it. And then beyond that, the post-finance support, so that once you fund it, these extension officers that we have around the country can assist the farmer in the earlier stages of their business life cycle to support them around skills and so forth, how things must be done around the treatment of the plants and so on and so forth. So that is also an element that is required, the pre- and post-finance support. You also raised the issue of HOTFIN and the progress and lessons learned. We indicated there in the slide which we showed all of the funds that we currently are trying to get in place. So this is at an earlier stage, we like going through it, testing things before we make them permanent and have them duplicated across the country. So HOTFIN, as you rightfully indicated, we will use as a basis to learn from it. We have a process of work that is undertaken between HOTFIN and our own credit committees where we engage together. So they do the assessment because they're a commodity-based organization, they understand the business better, but they come and present. These days we have these electronic mechanisms, so they don't have to fly all the way from the Western Cape to Pretoria. We connect and we have the credit committees that manages the approval of these transactions on a collective basis. So as we learn more lessons,
maybe also just to report that to date we have approved at least two transactions under this fund, and we are considering three other transactions.
Member Briat, I think we've covered the issue of the pre and post finance that you raised. And then I see Member Swim has just left. The question that he raised was around organic farming. We don't have a specific problem for that, but I guess it's something that we would want to look at as part of our strategy to see the extent to which that can be combined with the development mandate for the bank, and whether there's opportunities for emerging farmers and all of that to be involved. So we've taken note of that, and we will explore it. And then, pardon me with, with GAPA. The request for us to understand the differences between the fifth and the sixth parliament, it's appreciated that we get reminded of this. And I think at some point there was a reference to the legacy report somewhere. I don't know of the legacy report. So unless it's a report which was termed legacy, but
the internal document of parliament.
Sorry?
It is an internal document of parliament.
Okay.
From the fifth parliament handed over to the sixth parliament, so it's like a conclusion of their fifth term.
I see. No, we appreciate the clarity, Chair. So because the issue that the Honourable Member then asked was to say, would our presentation have looked different as we understood that legacy report, and because we don't have access to the legacy report, all we were responding to is a letter which I hope members have access to, which was very specific to say, give us the following. And it was also very specific in terms of those transactions that we dealt with here, which created the confusion. Because those transactions are not part of any grant funding by the department or the bank. Those are pure commercial but development-oriented transactions. So the issue of the dual mandate, I did give an indication here at an earlier time when I was responding to the previous questions around the need to relook the bank. Let me just define it as such so that we don't commit to work that still has to be undertaken to investigate how that relook should look like. But the essence is to ensure that there's a unit that is specifically development-oriented, and one that is specifically commercially oriented, because at this stage we're having both mandates to work with, and with the kind of funding we have, you can understand the challenges that we face. Whether we feel the pressure for transformation, we do feel that pressure. We feel the pressure from all angles, from our own commitments as leadership of the bank, to all the stakeholders, including this parliament, even some of our investors, because of the nature of how they want to also show the areas of transformation. There are those funding lines that we get that have specific requirements to different types of development impact. The stakeholders that we work with, our own accounting authority and so on and so forth. So the board, National Treasury, everybody puts focus on transformation. And I don't want to overplay this, but
you cannot ask media to run against or same board. So you need to be able to have the right elements that are required for an effective development mandate. And this is what is required with the review and the relook of the bank.
And maybe just to add on that, I'm not sure the experience of the fifth parliamentary committee that would have been shared in the legacy report, but to the extent that it maybe indicates a land bank that is not committed to transformation of the sector, or a board and a management team that is not invested in a successful transformation of the sector. I think we do need to express the strongest commitment to making sure that the land bank lives up to the expectation that is defined in the Land Bank Act, the expectation that is defined through the various engagements that we have, and as indicated, the commitment that we've made to drive transformation, inclusivity in this agricultural sector, because we think that that is how we can really contribute towards the appropriate level of economic growth.
And perhaps just to, because I think this is an important point, because the commitment to this agenda is very important. So if you look at the annual financial results, the integrated report that we issued for the financial year that ended March, just so that I'm safe in terms of numbers, but perhaps the acting CEO can validate the number. We have reported that through the creation of this wholesale financing facility, which is offered to the emerging sector, so we do support the emerging sector through the wholesale funding facility, where these are totally new entrants that are supported by established businesses. We have an example in Mpumalanga with a partner that is involved in the sugar cane industry. We have indicated in the annual report that I think it's approximately close to 100 million of what is called negative carry. So where the bank runs at a loss for that book, and it runs at a loss, deliberately to subsidize the nature of entry of emerging farmers into the sector at very subsidized levels of interest. We do that negative carry, despite the fact, as I indicated, that in fact our funding needs to be repaid to commercial investors. So if you look at that annual report, you'll see the figure, unless maybe you remember it. Yeah. Okay. So we can check that close to 100 million there. And then Honorable Mutui, we've dealt with the legacy report. We don't have sight of that, but if there are specific questions that emanate from that, we really will welcome engaging with those.
And maybe again, let me just provide apologies for my chairperson, who was not able to be here, and just give context that the Land Bank has a cycle of quarterly board and board committee meetings, and October is the month of our board and board committee meeting. So today we have our Audit and Finance Committee meeting that is sitting, and hence some of our board members are engaged in those discussions and are not able to join us.
Then Member Mdwedi also raised the issue of the blended finance scheme or the Black Producer Commercialization Program, and to the effect that there were concerns raised with regard to the criteria that would have become a problem. And indeed, as a result, the department instituted we had lots of issues around it, because in where specific customers would qualify, even though they were qualifying for higher grants, but the criteria allowed for it, we ought not to, in hindsight, have looked at those transactions, but we would not have the basis to not look at them, because the criteria were specific and we were within those criteria. So let me try and perhaps review all of the remaining questions, because it's quite a list still, and see if in terms of the context that I've painted, some of it is not appropriately addressed. I think most of them are addressed, particularly in your space, and Member Mbedi, so if we can please get some information on Bongani, so that we can appropriately follow up. And the issue of seed as well, if we can get the detail, but just to say that at an initial reaction point of view, the bank does not buy seed. It doesn't do that business. We don't go and buy seed in order to either sell or give to other people. It might well be that some of our partners, because they operate in the value chain of supporting with seeds and fertilizer and all of that, that they may have provided that, but let's get the detail.
Perhaps I request that all the other outstanding questions you respond in writing.
Okay.
By no later than 12 o'clock on Friday.
Okay.
That's right, we would have otherwise given now.
So yeah, but unfortunately we have a second presentation to take.
Okay.
And again, we want to be fair with them in terms of time. So we will now, honorable members, hand over to the DDG and the department to take us through their presentation of the Agri-BEE. Thank you.
Chairperson?
Thank you,
Chair. Can I just ensure that the Land Bank is specifically explained to us the percentage between loan and grant funding, as requested when they respond on Friday?
Absolutely. As I said, all outstanding questions, we would like them to send them in writing, so that we can be able to make them available to the members. So, DDG, please proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. Chair,
really not delve deeper into the background and the objectives, the purpose, because the land bank has traversed, has done a lot of good work in terms of outlining what the purpose of the Agri-BEE fund is. And the chair has also, in his opening remarks, re-emphasized what should actually be expected in terms of the impact of this fund, which is actually to contribute to transformation in the sector. But whether we have covered the ground or not is a subject which we can discuss for days, you know. From a department side, we really cannot confidently answer in the positive to say a lot of ground has been covered as far as the Agri-BEE's objective is concerned. So that is the objective, Chair. Slide 3, the background, the objectives. Slide 4, I will not touch on that. Slide 5, Chair, that table depicts the proposals received for consideration under the fund from 2012 to date. And we have tried to structure the table in a manner that will actually provide a better perspective to members of the portfolio committee, knowing that they represent the whole country. In total, Chair, 178 proposals were received and assessed in line with what my colleague from the land bank was saying. We do receive the applications and we assess them and we hand them over to the land bank so that they conduct due diligence. So since 2012, that is the number, 178. And we try to actually indicate the essence of each application and the spread per province. That is in terms of equity, if the application in the main wanted some equity in a particular business, or marketing infrastructure to enhance that business enterprise, agro-processing infrastructure, and other. Other means submissions or proposals which fell outside the mandate of the Agri-BEE fund. So, Chair, that is the spread per province. I don't think I need to go through the list. Slide 8, Chair, proposals pre-screened and recommended to the land bank, due diligence assessment. That is the spread per province and per strategic areas. Total 80. Chair, when we go to slide 7, it is an attempt to respond to the most important question of impact. enterprises, the province, the year approved, the funding requirement, the amount allocated, and the measured impact. I must hasten, though, Chair, to say that there is still a need to provide more information in terms of profiling these enterprises as they currently are, because I do not think that that last column, measured impact, provides the current status of these companies. So we have agreed and would like to apologize, Chair, that there is a need to provide the current state, you know, of these companies. The measured impact, for example, in terms of tropical mushroom, company revenue grew by 3.3% during that period. Employment increased as indicated. Six of the beneficiaries sit on the trust committee and trust board with full voting rights. The business supplies the following markets: Pick and Pay, Fresh Market, Food Lovers, Fruit and Vegetable Wholesalers in Gauteng, Debonair's Restaurant in Rustenburg. That is just an example, Chair, of the intended impact. But as I indicated, it will be needful to look at the current state, how these companies are doing. Then we also have, Chair, on slide 7, the Valley Farms Processing, which is in Limpopo. The amount which was allocated was 4.7 million. And there is a comment there: subsequent to the upgrade of the facility, operations came to a halt, with management indicating that they encountered challenges with sourcing raw material from the communities who are shareholders and owners of the facility. Currently, the facility is being leased out to an independent BEE company at a fee. Slide 8, Chair, Stacking Fruit Packers in the Western Cape. It was given 5.4 million in 2014-15. And the far right, that is what has happened since. Company sales grew by 26%. During that period, permanent employment increased from 60 to 97. Business is now HACCP and Global Gap certified. The business supplies the following new markets. Those are the markets. In terms of Siyabuselela Agricultural Cooperatives in Eastern Cape, was given 6.9 million in 2014-15. But Chair, I must indicate that in terms of our reports, it was not implemented because production infrastructure was destroyed during the approval process of the fund at the time when approval was granted. The production infrastructure was destroyed. Number 5, slide 9, Tokozani Staff Holding, which is also in the Western Cape. It was approved in 2015-16 to the tune of 3.4 million. The company sales grew by 233% from 2015 to 2017 at an annual rate of 49%. Permanent employment increased from 3 to 7. Local market access international markets accessed. I must also indicate, Chair, that I know about this company that recently they have come to a stage where they now want to buy out the owner and take over the company completely. The process is underway to try to assist them in that direction. People that were assisted as far as this business is concerned were workers, you know. But they are now at a stage where they want to buy the owner out. Slide 10, Chair. So Liz Bulterey in Limpopo, 2015-16, 8.1 million. The company's revenue grew by 8.8%. During that period, the number of employees increased from that number to 208. As a result of the new packhouse facility, the business is now SA GAP certified. And those areas represent the market of the company. Chair, slide 11. The overall impact of the fund on supported projects. These businesses have managed to increase turnover post-intervention. There has been an increase in job opportunities created. I've already intimated that. Acquired marketing infrastructure afforded the businesses an opportunity to improve competitiveness. The businesses have been able to penetrate and access new markets, and as indicated, many of them are now SA GAP certified. In cases where equity was acquired, beneficiaries were empowered in terms of the ownership and management control. Showcased by representation on the board and having voting rights. Current activities, slide 12, under the fund, a 3-year contract between the department and Land Bank has been concluded, as indicated by my colleague from the Land Bank. Currently, 6 proposals to the value of 44.8 million are undergoing evaluation process at various stages. Majority of the projects being considered require value-adding agro-processing infrastructure. That is just a depiction of the balance of the fund to date, Chairperson. On an annual basis, the fund, the AgriBEE fund, is recapitalized by the National Treasury, and that is what has been transferred to the Land Bank in 2019-20, which is 43 million. And it has already been indicated what the balance is. Conclusion, Chair, slide 14. 2 equity deals were approved since relaunch of the fund in 2012. Majority of applications approved are value-adding agro-processing infrastructure projects. 1 application approved for a cooperative for value-adding infrastructure could not be implemented due to production-related issues after approval was granted. 6 proposals to the value of 44.8 million are undergoing evaluation process. Thank you, Chair.
As your presentation made by the Department of AgriBEE started on a staying on questions of clarity.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, my question would be on for the department. Looking at the presentation from the Land Bank and the criteria and objectives and whatever they had on their presentation on slide 16, I would like to find out what criteria is used by the department. Because if you look on slide 5, they had 178 applications, but then it goes down to 18. So somewhere the department needs to get to that 178 criteria. So would that be different to the criteria that the land bank then uses to obviously zoom down? So I'm looking at getting 178 people down to 18, or am I reading this wrong? All 178 that went to, were supposed to then, you know, there was a criteria to get to the 178. Is that the same criteria that the land bank then used in their slide that they had up on slide 16 for criteria or agri-BEE? I'm just checking if there's two different criteria at some point. Then, as far as I can see, the last companies or people that were funded was in 2016-17, I think. What happened after that, during that period? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Priyat.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to link to Honourable Stain, my fear is quite the same as well. We continue to hear that there is a criteria, but we've never seen such a criteria. So I would maybe ask whether the department can give us this criteria. We've also heard that there is a committee that decides and speaking to the conclusion time and things, we continue to hear of the approval process. Maybe just to enlighten us, who is this committee? Who are they set out of to actually decide on this? And then also to get back to the slide of the proposals received, are these all the proposals that have been received, and are all of the proposals automatically approved? Because this is what I gather from this slide. And then a last question, Chairperson, is, do I understand correctly that agri-BEE and the funding model and everything in terms of this is also people approach the department and ask for a loan and ask for funding, or does the department actively market their initiatives? Because I think that also might impact, because I'm quite worried if you look at, you know, the Northern Cape, which only has, you know, three proposals that have been received in 8 years. Mm. And that is my fear. If you take all of these numbers, 178 and the amount look good, but if you take it for 8 years, it's worrying, because isn't that why our development farmers aren't seeing a change, and Land Bank says we aren't seeing that change. Isn't that the reason? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Masipa. sorry. Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the DDG. The question that I have, Chair, is on slide 17 of the Department of the Land Bank, they have got about 46 million worth of applications that have been approved and sent to the Department of Agriculture for the decision. But then the amount that the Department of Agriculture deposited into the fund of the land bank to finance this transaction is about, they deposited 43.8 million. But then the statement says current balance is in the account is 251 million. The question that I have is that when is the department going to pay for this transaction that has been approved by or recommended by the land bank, if there is sufficient funds in the account of the land bank to support this transaction. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Montoedi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think what the DDG said, he said the program's impact is to contribute to transformation. But I'm more worried, Chair, that applying or taking part in the program itself. I'm not sure what could be the reasons to that. Is the reasons because programs are started at the level of national, even provincial offices, and they are just not cascaded down to district or even local offices where farmers are, so that they can take advantages of the program? Because, as I said earlier, that on the land bank side, they are an administrator of the project, and yet in the land bank offices, nobody can give you information about this program in their, I'm speaking about the Northwest office in Freiburg, in Dr. Ritson's Mumbai. Now, is that some of the challenges why people have not, farmers have not taken advantage of the program? And the gap from 2012, the 178 applications, I think we must just focus on page 6, where it takes them down to 18 applications. Because I think there are those that could have not met the requirements, maybe have not submitted the documentation. Can this also be attributed to the fact that there's nobody down there who actually assists some of these farmers so that they must comply in terms of documentation to then submit check? So it's very worrying, Chair, that farmers, every province has got people that can take advantage of this program. And you start a program in the department and there's no movement on that. And from the land bank presentation, they said that they are sitting with 6 transactions of about 46,299,546. The department also acknowledges that, but the figure is not the same. I'm not sure what could be the cause of that, because the department is sitting at 44.869 million, same transactions, which are 6 transactions, but there's a difference in terms of what is actually the figure of those 6 transactions. Now, another thing that maybe one must just check is that, what is the turnaround time? And raising the issue of the turnaround time, something that I also want to raise to DG is that this process of having due diligence done by land bank and you having your internal committees again sitting, processing, either approving or rejecting, and coming back to the land bank, is it not actually going to be one of the causes for the delay in finalizing? And how do you think, what is it that you think must actually be done in order to deal with, so that transactions must be finalized as soon as possible? And my worry, Chair, is that, lastly, for the 16-17 and 17-18 and 18-19 financial year, there were no movement. Was it at that time when there was a suspension letter? Why was there a suspension letter that resulted in 3 years, 3 financial years where there were no activities? Because I think this backlog, these transactions should have long been concluded. The problem of delaying some of these transactions is that you have, by the time you approve them, the situation is not the same down there like when the beneficiaries apply. You find some people are no longer there, you are sitting with an application that is 3 years old. Or these 6 transactions that you're having, for which financial year were they actually applied in? And why are you not able to conclude an application in the financial year that is submitted? So that you don't keep 3 years, 4 years of applications, the next thing you approve. When you approve there, people are no longer on the ground. Because that is the reality, is that our farmers, those that apply through cooperatives and so, get to be confronted with a change. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaba.
Thank you, Chair, and let me also thank the department for the presentation. Only a few questions. One on slide 5, page 5. It was interesting for me the ratio of the received proposals. There's a considerably huge number in the Western Cape, and when you come to the totals again, is the Western Cape, the Gauteng, which have big numbers also. I wonder if this has to do, anything to do with the existence of metros. But what I wanted us to get here is that if there are any issues which are an advantage in these provinces that can be taken into consideration and be used or considered for other provinces as well, or if there are shortcomings in other provinces that makes this to be low, so that those things should be corrected and assist the process moving forward. On 7, you have the Zeli Farm. On the Zeli Farm, on your extreme right, you are talking about that subsequent to the upgrade of the facility, operations come to a halt, and then it is further said that there's a challenge with sourcing raw materials from the communities who are shareholders. And I wonder which one exactly is the cause of the problem here. This also takes me to my common concern or usual concern that sometimes we do have a weakness in the department which I think should be corrected, that when you do such issues, there's a weakness of sometimes emphasizing on the end product, that is maybe marketing and processing, and forget about production, primary production. And that being there, sometimes the reason when you can have an infrastructure which does not have material to be processed. That is what I'm concerned about in that slide 7. But on 8, the last one, you mentioned that there was something destroyed there. I wonder what was the cause of this destruction, which also ended up to non-performance, and therefore what? Is that the end of it, or there is some correction or some measure to be taken? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Clarke.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, in addition to what all our members have asked, I want to know, taking from slide 5 and 6, how does the department market this service or this program? I'm looking at the provincial spread, especially on slide 6. Because if this is since 2012, it then leaves so much to be desired in terms of impact. Are these just direct applications or giving walk-ins, or how do they know about this program, or how do you get these applications? Because, Chair, if there's money set aside for like BEE grants, obviously the program has to be marketed and people would have to develop interest, will have interest looking at how this sector is impacting on our lives and everybody else is getting into agricultural businesses now late. Slide 7, proposals approved and measured impact. Value Farms number 2, this is a grant, not a loan. What happened now to, how are you holding them accountable in a way? And what's the way forward? I'm looking at your measured impact reason there. Now, currently, the facility has been leased out to an independent BEE company, LFE. It means the original application, the money that was approved for, was not used correctly. Are we building businesses for people, or are we supporting them? How are they accounting now for the money that is there? Because Now GD landlords, they are just leasing out to independent people. Honorable Munzuri has handled the issue of the subsequent 3 financial years post this one, as to why there was a lull there. Slide 8, there's a difference in your report and land bank. They don't have Siyabusele like agricultural cooperative in their presentation. What happened to the 6.9? That after approval, this project was not implemented because production infrastructure was destroyed during the approval process. Was this money released or it was never released? Hence, it doesn't appear go land bank. And what is it that we did ever since? Did you just leave it there now without any assistance, because now after approval, the infrastructure was destroyed? I'm trying to trace what kind of support do you offer to this agricultural cooperative, because it was the only cooperative that was that applied and only in the Eastern Cape. Honorable Gapa has spoken to the provincial stratfor. It is a bit skewed. It's only KZN and Western Cape that I saw them are being approved. Now you have somebody in Eastern Cape, a cooperative, infrastructure gets destroyed and there's no further indication for what happened to that. I have spoken to the issue of clarity of the sixth project for how does it relate to the money that was supposed to be given to it. Chair, on slide 11, the overall impact, I dispute the issue of how supported businesses have managed to increase turnover, because it's not all of them that has been stated there. Two could not make it. Others, implementation was not done, and the other one is leasing out the infrastructure that is there. So the impact leaves so much to be desired on this program. If you say majority of projects being considered, we are only 6 is under consideration. I think your majority review again from 2012 up to 2019. This is a good program. If it is being followed, we will see transformation. But if this is transformation with the pace that we are moving, then we are not doing any impact. Akona anything. We can't even say it's a drop in the ocean. The whole of South Africa, 2012 up to now, 3 projects failed. Siyabuselela does not appear, 2 does not. So it's 3 projects in a way from 2012 up to now. Is the department willing to transform agricultural sector? Is your collaboration with Land Bank yielding results? When are you approving those ones that due diligence has been completed by Land Bank that are stated there, that are very skewed in terms of your provincial spread? Are you aware? Because you're not mentioning them, you're just saying 6 are being processed, that it's only Western Cape and KZN that are awaiting your approval. And what is it that you're doing to bring other provinces on board? Because the initial applications, it showed there were a number of applications from provinces, go to the shortlisting, everybody falls off, nothing is being followed up. What is it that we're doing? So if ever we have to transform this sector, the agricultural sector, with the pain that we're dealing, we are not going anywhere, we are not winning, and there's no transformation in fact if we are trying to do transformation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. TDG, perhaps I may sponsor a few questions as well on the presentations made by the department. And mine would be, can you please characterize the approved projects and those under consideration in terms of them being 100% black ownership or majority owned black businesses and or empowered BEE companies that range between 0% to 30%. Second question would be on agri-processing is a major growth sector in the agriculture value chain. What percentage, therefore, of the Agri-BEE fund has empowered black farmers to grow the BEE stake in this subsector? Question three, how many jobs have been created over the life of the fund, and how many of these jobs have been at the level of management position for HDIs? What would you say, DDG, is the percentage of funding received to date that has been allocated? And my last question would be on Agri-BEE funding, which is currently far underfunded in relation to the enormity of the need. Therefore, what strategies are in place or is the land bank pursuing to ameliorate this funding gap? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to put certain things into perspective and indicate that we are here as a team. I'm leading this team on behalf of the DG. Next to me is the acting DDG, who's responsible for the Agri-BEE Fund, but not directly. There is still a chief director under her who's dealing with the Agri-BEE. Then I've got the head of the DG's office on my left. So I would like to honestly say to you, Chair, that we will attempt to deal with the questions, but from my gut feeling and my understanding, some of the questions would require us to still do some more work and probably respond in writing to the committee. Having said that, Chair, I will allow the acting DDG, Ms. Dingile, to deal with some of the questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, members, and acting DDG. Good afternoon. I think I would like to touch on the simplest one that has been asking about the criteria for funding. And you do have that in practice, and unfortunately not have been forwarded for the members, but we do have as a backup document which we will be able to supply it as soon as possible if we are given maybe a consolidated deadline for all the issues like land bank, but it's already available. And that has been used as a criteria for pre-screening. And whoever have met the criteria is able to be forwarded to land bank for due diligence. Also, in terms of profiling or promoting the fund through the provinces and farmers at large, we are operating in alignment with the provincial government. We do have a structure wherein we sit with all the agencies. We may have possibly missed to make it a quarterly engagement topic so that we are ensuring that everybody is in par in terms of monitoring and moving with us on this. But it is a program that we believe it is well known in the provinces, and the details then to the district, as the question was asked, how does it go down to the district? It's not an area that I'm able to confidently state and respond to. So we'll have to investigate and come up front as to, from the province, how does this then get down to the district? And the issue of the question of 6.9 that was allocated to, that was a requirement by one of the projects, I can confirm that as I have inquired, that was not allocated because of the destruction of the facility that impacted on the qualifying of the project. So in that case, though, that fund was never transferred to the company of the project. For now, I'll take a breath and allow the colleagues to proceed while I'm looking at others. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'll ask Mepa Fedili to respond to some.
Okay. Let me start with Honorable Stain's question, which is confined to slide 5. I think Honorable Stain wanted to know if we are using the same criteria, the department and the land bank. I think I need to clarify this issue to say we receive applications like what is reflected on slide 5. We do receive applications from farmers, from business entrepreneurs, and we assess them in line with a set of criteria used by the department. But then we forward those that we believe have the potential to the land bank, and the land bank conducts further due diligence to make sure that only those that have the potential for success are funded. So we do look at what we receive from the sector, we assess, and we pass on to the land bank to do due diligence. Honorable Briet talked about the criteria for selection. I think it's almost the same question as Honorable Stein. I've already explained that yes, we do have the criteria, and as my colleague has indicated, we do have a document here which actually has a comprehensive list of the criteria that we use and the structure that is responsible for assessing these proposals. But there's another question which was asked: what is it that we are doing, you know, to market the program? Well, my colleague has indicated that the program is known. However, I must indicate that there is still a need, I think, you know, that we should have a dedicated program, you know, of regularly, you know, informing provinces about this program in a marketing form. Even if we were to, you know, develop pamphlets of some sort which, you know, talk about this program and we distribute them in provinces. In a nutshell, Honorable, I agree with you. There is still a need, you know, that we promote this program. And more than that, we educate farmers, you know, in terms of applying. Honorable Klapa asked a question, for example, in terms of, and Honorable Klapa, about the distribution per province. for example, you see that in the Western Cape, there are those proposals which have been approved, and in Gauteng, you know, he asked the question to say, is it because the two are metros? It could be, you know, but I think there is a responsibility from our side as a department, you know, to go out there to other provinces to educate farmers, to promote the program, educate them in terms of how to complete application forms and so forth. I think there is a need to do that.
And yes, Honorable Montwedi talked about movement in terms of applying, which is very, very slow. The fact that we've got 178 applicants and yet only 18 have been approved. Honestly, this cannot be defended, Honorable Montwedi. I mean, I'm part of the department, but I must also acknowledge the fact that this is really, really, really too few, really. It's too few. And this could be attributed to what other honorable members asked earlier, to say probably we are not doing a lot of marketing and a lot of education. You know, we need to go out there. There must be a dedicated program, you know, aimed at educating our farmers in terms of the agri-BEE, because indeed this is too little. And Honorable Montwedi also observed that our figures do not tally the departments and the land banks. I think we'll have to go into this to look at it, where the variance is mapping, to look at where the difference is. We do not deny, we must just verify. The other question by Honorable Montwedi is that the fact that we have a structure in the department dealing with assessment, and thereafter we send the proposals to the land bank for due diligence, is it not taking long? I think it's something that cannot be argued, Honorable Montwedi. I think it takes long. We've got to admit, and probably as a department we have a responsibility to review this process, you know, to see to what extent, you know, can we shorten it, because as you rightly put it, if it takes too long, by the time the approval is given, maybe that person has already considered other avenues. I think this is an assignment, a message that we are taking from the committee, that we will need to review our approval process. Yes, I think if you looked at the presentation by the land bank, and I think Honorable Montwedi asked this, there was a time when the program was suspended. Our Director General, after looking at the program, how it was being dealt with, he decided that to give himself some time to study what was going on, he should suspend the program. But I don't think it was for more than a year, Mepindi. Was it for more than a year? I don't think it was for more than 3 years. Oh, it was 3 years. Yeah. So, pardon me that I wasn't aware that it's 3 years. So that can be the reason, therefore, Honorable Montwedi, for not other proposals being considered during that period.
Chair, honorable members. My name is Vafekile Bopape, and I'm going to read the comments that the minister just sent here when we were sitting, because she had an opportunity to look at this presentation, and she requested that we indicate her comments on this presentation. She says that the report represents projects that were designed and agreed upon by the previous administration. Some of the projects do not seem to have followed what the objective of the fund was. A review is therefore required. So it adds to what Mr. Khobakwe just said in terms of reviewing the time frames. So that is the message from the Honorable Minister. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and Honorable Members. I also wanted to confirm the misalignment in terms of figures that we have observed, especially that Nedbank has presented up front before us. So we also have made some observations and would like to bring that back and make the proper alignment in terms of that. There was a question regarding the... I also wish to apologize that I'm unable to recognize members by name for now. I'm here only for a few days or months. Specifically asking about which community has been contributing in terms of the challenges that influence the incompetence of the project. So that one I would like to propose that we come back and add on our list of the questions that we have to answer later on. Also, the other question that I would like to request that we allow time to come back is the specific number of jobs in the lifetime of the project. Because in our case, we only have reported in terms of the improvement the project. So we have to consolidate all of those. I also want to acknowledge the comments on the impact that is disputed. Of course, when you look at the three projects that are referenced and looking into the population of South Africa, we cannot be confidently saying the three projects have made an impact in a transformation of the sector and growth of the sector. So that's the area of weakness that we are acknowledging the disputed. The categorization of the project also, I would like to propose that we come back as asked by the chair. Let me pause there also. Thanks so much.
Chair, if I may just go back to the questions by Honorable Tapa. He asked about the Velifarm enterprise. Similarly, Honorable Tappe also asked about the Velifarm processing enterprise. May I request, Chair, that you give us an opportunity to find out more about this, what actually happened, the constraints which buffeted this transaction. Similarly with slide 8, Sia Buselela Agricultural Cooperative, Honorable Tlapo was very passionate because this is the only cooperative which applied, you know, for the fund and nothing happened. Much as my colleague has indicated that ultimately 6.9 million was never transferred. I think there's a need to still follow up and find out what has actually happened. The last bite from myself, Honorable Chair, are your questions. The first question, you said we should characterize the projects, you know, in terms of the profiles of the owners,
you know, in terms of designations and things like those. You also asked a question, Chair, about how many jobs have been created for the historically disadvantaged in terms of this fund. You also asked a question relating to the percentage of the fund received and allocated. As you can see, our presentation did not provide details on that. You also talked about the funding gap, which is a very, very serious thing, Chair. Indeed, there is a funding gap, you know. If you look at the fund that is dedicated to this very, very important transformation imperative, I think the fund is not sufficient at all. But I would want to request, Chair, that you give us an opportunity to really provide details in terms of the substantive questions which you asked. I think those are quite substantive questions which require us to reflect and get the right information. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Masipo, you had a burning follow-up question with Honorable Montwedi. Honorable Spain as well.
Thanks, Chair. My question was not answered. I think the question was very simple. The land bank indicated that they did their due diligence on the applications, and the grant approval decision is awaited from the Department of Agriculture. The question is, when is the grant going to be given to these applicants, the six applicants? Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Montwedi.
Thank you, Chair. I was on the same issue. I just hope the review will not affect projects that due diligence has already been done on. They must be given their money. The review must be done on new projects so that people don't have to wait another 2-3 years on top of whatever that they've already spent. Now, I just want to check, Chair, that it means Land Bank has been sitting with 164 million since 15-16 financially. That could not be used as a result of the suspension that took place, I think, 1617. And I remember I would have asked you to check from the land bank in terms of if there's money that is still with you, does the money go back or it just remains with you as land bank? It doesn't go back to National Treasury for the allocation. Now, Chair, I'm only worried, Chair, that the... But I think we'll raise that in our meeting, Chair, of the 3-year suspension that the DG took, where public money is just lying there and it is not being used. It is just lying there because he or she was not comfortable with something on the memorandum of all that MOU. Thank you.
Honorable Stein.
Chairperson, I must raise my concern that this is the kind of presentation that this portfolio received, Chairperson, on six programs or projects that was receiving funding, Chairperson. I think we made it clear as a portfolio that when we receive presentations, at least it must give us the current status of what's going on. Chair, I think it's unacceptable that members here know more on programs that's going on to the ground. And I check it and I cannot understand why officials that are responsible for this can tell us that they don't know about this or they will have to refund. If you read this, Chairperson, the information is from 2016-17. It's 2019. It's no wonder it's not working. I really want to raise this as a concern, Chair, that when officials are responsible for something, even if you are not directly responsible, but it's your line function, if you are the manager or the DG or the DBG responsible for that, when you come to a portfolio committee, make sure that you know what is going on. That is why, Chair, when we go on oversight, we can find things that the department looks, you know, like it's the first time that they have ever seen this project. Because it is the first step when they go out with us. It is not good enough, Chairperson, and I think that message needs to go out, even if it's not from the portfolio, it needs to go out from myself. It's no wonder things are not working on the ground. Transformation is a very important aspect. And the department with the program that's responsible for that comes here and doesn't know this and will have to go and find out that, and it's just not good enough, Chair. When we get that, the response in writing, we also need the memorandum of agreement between the land bank and the department so that we can see exactly who's responsible for what. We also need to know datagram, Chairperson, not only with the position but the name of the official who is responsible for that. It is unacceptable, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you. Let me start with Honorable Masipa. Honorable Masipa is talking about a grant from the department. Remember that this fund is with the land bank. We do assess the proposals and we forward those that we consider to be meeting the criteria, we forward them to the land bank and they do due diligence and then after that approval. And the fund would be coming from them and not from us. You know. So I heard Honorable talking about the grant from the department. Maybe he can explain.
Mm-mm.
Honorable members, please be very patient. I do afford you an opportunity to ask a question and let us also, in upholding our guest's dignity and respect, ensure that we afford the time to answer. But I see the land bank wants to chip in just to give clarity on this and then hand back to the DG. So please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to clarify this matter that indeed I think the question was also raised as to whether the land bank sits with the money. Yes, the land bank sits with the money. It's in the bank account of the bank. But in order to, and we did indicate that we now have 251 million in the bank. But in order for us to disperse it, it has to go through the process we explained. Which is that the department, together with the provincial units, must market the program and then select those that require to be undertaken due diligence by the land bank. Once the land bank has done the due diligence, it then says, like we've done with slide number 19 of our presentation, we say due diligence is now done. Now it's up to you to give us instructions whether to pay or not. And then when we get the instruction from that bank account, we then pay to the beneficiary. So I thought I should just explain how that process works so that members are aware of how that is structured.
Thank you for the proceed.
Thank you very much to my colleague from the land bank. There was a question by Honorable Mudwedi in terms of the 3-year suspension. What were the reasons? You know, I'm afraid, Chair, to mention the reasons because that was the decision of the Director General. You know, after he came into the department after he assumed office, one of the things that he did was to apply his mind and to suspend this program. So probably it's a question that can be answered by him. Honorable Steyn asked, It wasn't actually a question, it's a complaint. Justified, yes. I want to agree with you, Honorable State. When we come here, we should be more than prepared. It's the truth which we have to accept. We have to be really prepared, and we take that message very, very seriously. And I would like to say, as leading this team, that we take full responsibility, and that this will be corrected, and that when we submit written answers, we'll make sure that we also provide the name of the official, the chief director who's responsible for AgriBEE. But even though she's not here, it cannot be an excuse, really.
Yes.
That's the truth.
Thank you, DDG.
You are still not answered. Park it. You've asked the question twice and it's still carried.
So park it, because you will have a way forward on the matter. DDG, with these questions that seemingly are not being answered, and the fear of answering some of the questions, we don't want to compromise the COVID. And the Honorable State, don't take pictures of us.
Because
we don't know where these pictures are going, so please don't take pictures of us. Just ensure that DDG, the questions that have been not clarified, not answered, they are answered in writing, including the issue of the suspension carried out by the DG. If you can answer it and you have fears of answering it, then you must raise it directly with the DG that this is a question asked by the committee and we need an answer to it. And we will request the department to respond back to us in writing by no later than next week, Friday, that being the 25th of October. So please ensure that you convey the message to your colleagues and to the DG that we would like written responses to these questions by no later than noon, 12 o'clock on Friday next week. We have other business of the committee to deal with, so I would like us to move on and park this one so that we get these oral, these written responses. We will then, according to the responses we receive, request the department to come on a date that we agree on to fully ensure that members are taken on board on these issues. I would like us to dispense of the last issue on our program, which is our second term proposed committee program. If you look at the program, as of today being the 15th of October, we have asked our content advisors to ensure that the BRRR report is concluded by today. They are working under pressure to finalize it and have it ready. No, we haven't attended the meeting. Why do you want to chase people away? You can't chase people away, Manyas. Wait until we attend the meeting, then they can depart. But the department also needs to be aware of the program of the committee, because we
say we require these things, they should be aware that this program was provided to them and was ready for COVID. So they are most welcome to remain with us. But the BRRR, honorable members, will be completed today. And we've asked the content advisors to please bear in mind that we are under extreme pressure to conclude our work. So we are asking them to work a little extra hard just to get this work through. So if you may ensure then, honorable members, that as well you are as responsible to ensure that when you receive the report by end of business day today, you actually utilize the time this evening to read through it, because we will have a sitting tomorrow at 9 o'clock merely to adopt the report. So we won't sit that long, just to come in and adopt the report. And we will then look at the minutes that I thought we would be dispensing today, we will carry out for tomorrow. That is the schedule for Wednesday the 16th of October. And on the 22nd of October, we will be having the department presenting its presentation on agri-parks. We were also hoping to have a briefing from Mrs. Kuzwai on the project of Spitzkop Farm. Unfortunately, we haven't had direct contact with her up to this hour. The secretary has been finished with the cell number, which they've been calling, and not operational. They've reverted back to the department in the province and they've been provided an email, which they sent an email to yesterday and are still awaiting response. But they are still trying to devise other means of getting hold of Mrs. Kuzwayo to alert her that she is required by the committee on the 22nd of October. If we are successful in having her, then she will be able to be party to this meeting of the 27th. On the 27th, honorable members, of November to the 2nd, 27th of October to the 2nd of November, the portfolio committee will be going on a trip to China, and the selected members of the committee, six of them, will be traveling together with two content advisors as well as the secretary of the committee will be accompanying them on this trip. Therefore, our next sitting will be on the 5th of November, which will be dealing with the presentation on the impact evaluation report for CASP, ERP, MAFISA, restitution, and recap, as well as consideration of the adoption of our oversight report from the KZN visit. This one, honorable members of the fifth, I must highlight that per the guidelines of Parliament, when the members and staff have traveled abroad due to issues of jet lag, they are often given a couple of days to recover. But they have requested to go with the business of the day on the 5th. We will be advised by the staff on the possibility of that, because particularly the content advisors that need to furnish us with some of the information necessary for this may be overwhelmed with work, particularly coming out of China and coming back. So we might need to revisit that item. rest of the program, honorable members, is as you see it from the 12th of November, the 19th and the 26th, being the three last items that we will be having. On the 12th of November, we are having a joint committee meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs on Ingonyama Trust Board. We will be inviting both the National House of Traditional Leaders as well as the Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, including the Ingonyama Trust Board and National Treasurer, for the 19th of November. We have requested the department to bring to the committee the FIU report and ensure that we are able to engage with the report. Together included in there is a briefing by Cavalia Meat Group as well as Majesty Oils Pty Ltd on the financial support provided to them by the Land Bank. On the 26th of November is a briefing by the former members of the High-Level Panel on the Assessment of Key Legislation and Acceleration of Fundamental Change on Land Reform and Agriculture. We will also be having a briefing by the Presidency on the report of the Advisory Panel on Land Reform and Agriculture, which will then conclude our work as a portfolio committee for this part of the year in Parliament. On the 3rd to the 6th of December, we will be carrying out an oversight visit where we will be visiting the entities of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. That would be ARC, OPP, and NEMEC. Honorable members, that is how the committee program is structured thus far. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the program with the necessary amendments I've spoken to? Honorable Clark.
Chair, I move for the adoption of this program.
Thank you. Can we have a seconder? Honorable Great.
Chairperson, I second.
Thank you, honorable members. With that said, our business of the day is thus concluded and the meeting.